The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
High drive, center field, hit the wall, grand slam. This is magnificent.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now here's Frank, Scott, Chris, and Adam.
Which players do we keep drafting and which ones are we scared of? Welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today. Frank Sample joined by Scott White and Chris Towers. We are now just 1 week out from opening day. You guys hyped? Scott's hyped. I see it.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Just had my home draft tonight. It did not go well. It did not go. I don't know why.
You would think
I underestimate the people in my home league every year.
Scott, I'm like, Scott, I've got a song about that.
Yeah, you do. You do.
Well,
you do.
We will debut that on tomorrow's podcast when Adam Azer is here, because Adam is an alternative rock kind of guy.
I feel like Adam will appreciate
it. He will appreciate it. But Scott, you would think that we're professionals, right? Like, we've been talking about fantasy baseball for the past, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 months, whatever it is. Well, really,
I wouldn't even dare estimate how many mocks and or real drafts I've done up to this point, March 24th. So I feel like I have a major advantage over these people who, I think some of them, it's probably their only fantasy baseball league.
I would guess 25 you've probably done at least, maybe now more, because that's just mock drafts, I would think.
There's a major scoring quirk in this league. It's the league I played in for like 20 years. It's a 10-teamer, but there's a major scoring quirk, a points league. Strikeouts for hitters are full minus one instead of minus half a point. And you wouldn't think that would have as big of an impact as it does, but it really shrinks the usable hitting pool, especially at a time when hitters don't really care how much they strike out. There are very few hitters that can deliver a near one-to-one strikeout to walk ratio anymore. And they all got pulled up, as they should have, but more dramatically than I expected. So I really, you know, I Austin Meadows I took in like round 10, but I was disappointed I didn't get Anthony Rizzo instead, you know, because I'm just not sure. Unless Meadows is as good as he was 2 years ago, he might not be startable in this league.
Oh, I mean, come on, Scott. You know the deal when it comes to Austin Meadows. So we're going to talk about Austin Meadows a little bit later on. Players we keep drafting, of course, players that scare us. We're going to run through each position. I did a 15-team salary cap draft right before we started. That's actually why we started a little bit later here tonight on YouTube. And I wound up with Trevor Bauer. Should you be scared of Trevor Bauer? Let's hit these news and notes first before we get into some of those players that we love. Just knock this out right at the top. The MLB is saying that they are going to crack down on pitchers using foreign substances. So good luck, because, I mean, as we've read in articles, it's probably over 95% of pitchers that are using something. Chris, is there any impact to this? Like, are you actually scared to draft someone like Trevor Bauer, who you yourself have questioned using substances, or even like someone like Garrett Cole, who kind of seems like...
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, all right. Well, does this worry you at all? This idea that the MLB is going to crack down on pitchers using stuff?
No. I would imagine... My guess, and obviously this is just a guess, but my guess is we're going to see like 2 or 3 token ejections early on in the season, maybe like a fine for a high profile player, and then it'll be nothing. And I'm not going to say whether that means people will stop doing it, but I would expect that it's going to be pretty inconsistently adjudicated, and it's not going to make a significant impact. So, like, there are a handful of players who have seen let's say, suspicious increases in their spin rates in a way that you typically don't expect without the use of foreign substances. Garrett Cole is one of them. Tyler Mahle is one of them. Trevor Bauer is one of them. A handful of guys on the Cincinnati Reds, TJ Antone is one of them. If you want to downgrade them, fine. But my guess is there are more pitchers who are using some sort of thing than are not. And we don't know for sure who is, and we don't know for sure who isn't. And we don't know how much of an impact it makes, and blah, 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 blah. So,
and we don't even really know how they're going to pick out those players. Like, is it because I know they're tying it to StatCast. Is it, are they talking about increases from last year in case, you know, Bauer's off free because he already made that jump last year, you know?
It was very funny to see Trevor Bauer's agent asking Jeff Passan whether players who used before last year or this year will be grandfathered in.
Yeah, it's quite ironic, right?
That was the term she used. Look, I have a hard time believing that they would take the two, because I mean, really, the two most high profile people involved in this that we talk about and know of are Garrett Cole and Trevor Bauer. They're inextricably linked. They pitched together at UCLA. They apparently don't like each other. Trevor Bauer accused Garrett Cole of doing this. Trevor Bauer then apparently seemed to do the same thing. I have a hard time believing that Major League Baseball is going to take the guy who signed the largest contract in Major League history for a pitcher and the guy who signed the largest annual contract in Major League history for a pitcher and suspend them for any significant amount of time or do anything that would make it so that they're not going to pitch at a high level. So I don't know, from like a moral and ethical standpoint, like they should just let them all use it. It's good when pitchers have better grip.
Yep.
Yeah. Wasn't there some talk in the offseason that MLB was like developing its own substance for them to use so that it would at least be uniform?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Look, if anyone's going to let you get Trevor Bauer or Garrett Cole at a discount, sure, take it. That would be my advice to you. How about, let's talk about another player that I won tonight in my salary cap draft. It's all about me, apparently. White Sox Vice President Ken Williams apparently has
that
indicated...
That was a bad pick, man.
What? Ken Williams?
Ken Williams?
Yeah, I took him on my team.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to do much.
It's a really...
Set the over-under at 0.5 steals, and I'll take the under.
It's a really unique format, Chris. I mean, let me tell you about it. The player I won was actually Andrew Vaughn, but White Sox Vice President Ken Williams apparently has indicated to Bob Nightingale that Andrew Vaughn will not be kept down in the minors for service time reasons. He had this to say, "We understand the service time issues that play here, but our feeling is that when you're ready to help the major league club, there's a spot for you. We're trying to put the best team out there. We have proven that over and over again." Scott, I don't know if this changes anything, but would you like to react?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of confirms what people throughout the organization have been saying all along. Of course, there's no way Ken Williams would say, "We are going to send him down for service time reasons." That's not something he would be allowed to say. But, you know, he's had a great spring. Vaughn has. Tony La Russa's raved about him at every opportunity. He really likes the quality of his at-bats, et cetera, et cetera. To me, it's immaterial at this point. Like, you know, you'd rather get the two extra weeks from Vaughn, of course. But 2 weeks is just a drop in the bucket in the course of a baseball season. And, you know, if you have to wait 2 weeks longer for contributions from Vaughn, that 2 week difference doesn't change where I'm drafting him. You know, mm-hmm. It'd be the same point whether I knew he was going to be up for the first 2 weeks or not.
Let's stick with the White Sox. Eloy Jimenez left with a shoulder injury on Wednesday during a spring game that he apparently was trying to rob a home run. And Scott, I think you were researching this from some kind of doctor talking about it. What'd you find?
Yeah, on Twitter, Dr. Jesse Morse. That's his Twitter handle.
I've seen him on Twitter. Yeah, he does a lot of stuff for fantasy football too. Yep.
Right. He brands himself one of the fantasy doctors, and he was suggesting that what he sees in the video from Eloy Jimenez reaching over the fence and kind of hanging by his arm, and then the way his shoulder responds, Dr. Jesse Morse was speculating that he dislocated his shoulder and tore his labrum, which would obviously be
bad.
Bad news.
Very bad.
I don't think it would be a season ender, but he would miss significant time, and there would be some questions about how he performed when he returned. You know, at least it's his left arm. It's better than his right, but still, it's not good. That's going on the interpretation of Dr. Jesse Morse from a camera angle that isn't particularly close, and you know, it's obviously not definitive, but I feel like it's better speculation than I can offer myself. So let's wait and see, but I would be very cautious in my approach to Eloy Jimenez until we hear something more definitive. Because right now the team's just calling it shoulder soreness. So, you know, it's a big difference between that and a torn labrum.
Yeah, and I hope we know more by the weekend, because it's obviously a very big weekend for drafts, you know, the weekend before opening day. So hopefully we find out more on Eloy Jimenez. He went for $26 in this 15-team salary cap draft that I did on Wednesday night. So yeah, that's still a good amount of money.
Too much.
Yeah, quite a bit there. Nick Anderson, reliever for the Tampa Bay Rays, has elbow tightness. So, I mean, they're still probably going to mix and match, but this might mean more goes to Diego Castillo. We know Diego Castillo is a really talented reliever. So, Chris, do you think, are you going to be making any adjustments to rankings as a result of this Nick Anderson injury?
I'll move Nick Anderson down, but
does it give you more optimism in Diego Castillo?
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, it's not necessarily a guarantee that he's going to be the guy. This is a team that what was the number? They had 8 different people have a save last season.
12.
12 different people have a save last
60 game season.
Sorry, I think the Cubs had 8 last year. So
I think there was a stretch where they had 5 saves by different guys, like in a row. A stretch of 5 saves from completely different guys.
That sounds about right.
I would be surprised if they just went, all right, now it's Diego Castillo. He's the closer.
Right.
There's no question about it. We're going to use him every day. But, you know, that's one fewer person. So you figure maybe they get 25 saves and, you know, or 45 saves over the course of the season. Maybe Anderson's limited for a month and Castillo gets 2 extra saves. I don't know. It's possible there's a big impact, but I don't think you can count on anyone being the closer for the Rays.
Dalton Varsho, catcher/outfielder for the Arizona Diamondbacks, has been optioned to their alternate training site. So I assume that means Carson Kelly will continue to get the bulk of starts at catcher. They do have Stephen Vogt as the backup there. It's quite old. But it seems like their starting outfield will be David Peralta, Ketel Marte, and I guess Tim LaCastro. Roster Resource has Pavin Smith in there, but...
Oh, Pavin Smith's in the running.
Tim LaCastro, is he playing?
I think he's dealing with something, right? I saw his name recently.
I think he had COVID.
He had COVID. I know he came back from that.
Okay.
I don't know how he's been performing, but I think he has been playing. If they have Ketel Marte in center field, I'd be kind of surprised for them to put LaCastro in the lineup. But you know, it's
say this about him: he'll get on base and he'll steal bases. He's got a decent walk rate, but in particular, this is a man after my own heart. He gets hit by pitches all the time. He just loves getting hit by a pitch. He had 4.82 plate appearances last year, 22 in 250 the year before. So, limited sample size, but 365 on base, 256 batting average, and 26 stolen bases without a caught stealing so far. If he is playing regularly, he could be a useful roto option.
It's kind of a Miles Straw situation all over again.
Yep.
Except, you know, a little more competition for the playing time there with LaCastro. Yep. A couple things. Not a good sign that Dalton Varsho couldn't win a job with Cole Calhoun out. Obviously, you know, there's a chance he figures some things out in the minors and comes roaring back later in the year. But I'm not particularly inclined to stash him unless it's a very deep league or a 2-catcher league. 2, good news for Josh Rojas, right? Sounds like second base job is his.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's great. Josh Rojas has been awesome in the spring, and we spoke about him the other day as one of Chris's favorite deep sleepers. It definitely helps his playing time as well. Harrison, go ahead.
Oh, I just want to point out Tim LeCastro in his minor league career, 5.9% walk rate, which is pretty bad. 6.3% hit by pitch rate.
I never knew that. You looked at hit by pitch.
You'd love to see that.
Like,
oh yeah, I'm a big Derek Dietrich fan.
Oh,
hit by pitch is like just as good as a walk, except sometimes you get hurt.
Who was that guy for the Rays a few years ago? I remember you liked him for the same reason. Right-handed batter.
Yeah, I can't remember what his name was, but yeah, I remember
he played for the Cubs too. I can't remember.
Yeah, was he on Cleveland as well at one point?
Yeah, I'm gonna see if I can find him.
Yeah, no, right. I know who you're talking about. Yeah, I love a guy who gets hit by a pitch. Willing to do anything to get on base.
Harrison Bader, outfielder for the St. Louis Cardinals, will miss 4 weeks at a minimum. So it seems like Lane Thomas, Austin Dean, or a gentleman named Justin Williams is going to get the opportunity to start in right field for the St. Louis Cardinals. Steven Brault, who was supposed to be the opening day starter for the Pittsburgh Pirates, has been shut down at least a month with a lat strain. Tyler Anderson looks like he's going to be their opening day starter. Good luck, Pirates fans. But if you play in an NL-only league, sure, Tyler Anderson. Kyle Wright was optioned. Scott, any optimism for Bryce Wilson?
Not really. He's not a big strikeout guy. Doesn't have a very diverse arsenal. I don't think he's a particularly good ground ball guy. Could be wrong about that, but I don't think he is. Throw strikes. Yeah, he profiles as a back-end guy, and I doubt he'll have a spot for long because Mike Soroka is well into his recovery. By the way, I looked it up.
Brandon Geyer.
Brandon Geyer, yeah, the people in the comments section beat me to it. Yeah, he had a 2015 Brandon Geyer hit by pitch 24 times, 2016 31 times.
Yeah, but only a 5.7% hit by pitch rate, so... Our guy Tim LeCastro, still the reigning champion. Derek Dietrich was 4.9%. So,
wow, the YouTube chat is crushing it.
We got some real baseball nerds here, and I love it.
That is great, man. Getting some Brandon Geyer love. Did not expect that today. Last thing I'll mention. Unfortunately, my guy TJ Antone will open the season in the bullpen for the Reds. I think it makes sense. He's dealing with an injury, so he hasn't really had the opportunity to get stretched out. So
love it.
Love it for love his value. I mean, I still think he could be valuable.
If people are going to move him down draft boards, like he's going to be in the rotation at some point. If he's not, he's going to pitch multiple innings at a time. There's going to be a ton of strikeouts.
Yep.
This is a kind of pitcher who I'm drafting a lot of, and I have a decent amount of TJ Antone. Alex Reyes is another guy. Mm-hmm. Tony Gonsolin and then Dustin May.
Freddie Peralta.
Yeah, ooh. Guys who Freddie can Peralta, be in the rotation. Or guys who can throw 2 to 3 innings at a time and get 5 or 6 strikeouts. Like I think this year, if you can get, you know, 3 of those guys on your team and they throw 100 innings with really good ratios, that's going to be really, really valuable as someone to either just start every week or, you know, slot in when you don't like your matchups.
At least in a categories league, they'd probably be worthless in a points league, but in a categories league.
You know, yeah, unless they're starting.
For a bad starting pitcher crop. Right.
They may be sparks.
Yeah, when but they even get the so, to, unless when they're they getting get wins the chance to
start. But that's what I mean, when they get the chance to start.
Yeah. Okay. I think Freddie Peralta, though, like TJ Anton's been getting hyped in the fantasy community for like months and whatever. Everybody really likes him for some. I think Freddie Peralta is going to be more what they want Anton to be. I think he's going to be in the rotation sooner and maybe stay in longer and be.
I think that makes sense.
Why can't they just both be
big
awesome?
Big strikeout
Scott?
Source.
Why can't they just both be awesome?
Well, they could be. I think Peralta should be getting the hype that Anton's been getting is what I'm saying.
It's like, what is it, a GIF or a meme? Why not both? Yeah. Get both of them. TJ Antone and Freddie Peralta. Quickly promote a few things before we get to the players we keep drafting and players that scare us. But you have drafts this weekend, of course. Just a reminder that you can download our Fantasy Baseball Today Draft Prep Guide for free over on the website. The link for that is cbssports.com/FBB Draft Kit. It has all of our rankings in there for head-to-head points, roto. There are salary cap values. There's a tracker for your draft if you want to, you know, just mark down everyone that's on your team throughout points. There's different kind of strategies and tiers. There's everything basically that you need to dominate your draft, and it's for free. So why not get it? It's cbssports.com/FBB Draft Kit. And the moment you've all been waiting for, the announcement, right? I probably should have led with this, but whatever. Missed opportunity. Listener League winners. I've conjured everything up. I got it.
Woo.
And this is what we are going to be doing. I think that I did this backwards. But for the 16 team for the people head-to-head categories draft this Sunday, which will be held at 6 p.m. Eastern time, the winners, of course, joining Frank, me, Scott, and Chris.
I made it.
That's right. You did. Yes. Mark Clements. Woo! Stephen Lipp. Mel Sanchez, Brian Mayer, Antoine Malone Jr., Matt Angelo, John Meyer, Eric Hall, Corey Barite. Hope I got that, Barite. Jason Redford, Christopher Ruohonen, Charles Barr, and Paul McGowan. If I just called your name, you are in the 16 team for the People Head-to-Head Categories League. No, Heath Cummings. Hooray. Heath Cummings isn't in it anymore. I asked him if he wanted to be. He said, "No, I'm out. I'm done."
He doesn't listen to the podcast anymore. He missed the submission deadline.
He's out.
Let's change all his garbage rules then.
We certainly can. Or maybe we should leave it up to.
We leave it. It's the Heath Cummings Memorial Garbage Rules League. That's the new rule.
That's the new name. I'm down with that. For the 12 team head-to-head points listener league that we will be doing, that draft will take place the next night, this upcoming Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern time. Adam and myself are actually going to be sharing a team, so that should be a lot of fun. I'm pretty sure it's just going to be him saying, draft whoever you want, Frank, but we'll make sure that we get James Paxton. Scott and Chris, you guys both made it again. Congrats. Sean Millerick made it for making this awesome piece of work.
You're falling.
Joel Massey, Jake Goodoo.
Still makes me laugh.
Sean Wemp, Jason Kring. I'm sorry if I'm messing up your names. Brian Fink. Tyler Wilhite. We'll go with Wilhite. Gabriel Molina, who is actually leading our bracket challenge right now. And I realize it's kind of weird because the March Madness bracket is not over right now. But we've got to go with who's in first place right now. Whoever actually wins the bracket, you're the one who's going to get the $100 Paramount Plus gift card. So we're definitely going to follow through on that. But Gabriel Molina, you are leading right now. You are in the 12-team points league. And last but not least, Aaron Holcomb. The submissions for this were awesome. Once again, last year we had the songs, the creativity, the thoughtfulness, and people who didn't send in Photoshop things. I mean, there was a few people that sent in like poems and song lyrics and just like awesome reasons why you should be part of the league. Some of the people who made it into this league are servicemen and workers. I chose someone that was in the army. There's another teacher in here. So all different kinds of people. We're looking forward to playing with you. It's going to be a lot of fun. Again, those drafts are coming this weekend, and congratulations to everybody who is going to be a part of it. All right, the players that we keep drafting and the players that we are scared of. What we're going to do is go position by position. And guys, we need to be brief. Rapid fire. I say this all the time and it never actually works. So maybe today's the day. Scott, why don't you get us started with the catcher that you keep drafting?
Ah, well, see, I thought I was going to be ahead of the curve here since I just wrote the article, the players I keep drafting, but I didn't include a catcher in it. So
this was actually very hard for me to do. I will admit, it's like, I'm trying to look through all my teams and I'm like, I don't even know. Who do I keep drafting?
Yeah, I'm sure the catchers I'm most invested in are like Francisco Mejia and Dom Nunez, but you have to play in a pretty deep league for them to be of relevance. So I'm going to say it's probably Mitch Garver for the majority of the audience, because he's basically free in a one catcher league, and there's good reports out of spring training. The numbers aren't good. He hasn't played that much, but it sounds like the Twins are pretty confident he has a swing back after an injury plagued year, and he was far and away the best catcher on a per game basis in 2019. So I'll take a shot on the upside, especially in a one catcher league where if it doesn't work out there, you know, there are going to be options on the waiver wire to fall back on.
Chris, the catcher you keep drafting.
I was trying to do some quick research, but I guess I'll,
I have
been keeping track of my most drafted players. I just don't have a catcher in that list yet. So
I can go if you want to keep researching.
I could use one.
Well, actually, the player that I keep drafting most at catcher is actually the the catcher that scares me most, and it's Gary Sanchez. So I'm just going to include those together. I think that his upside is massive. I also think his floor is terrible. And I understand why people are scared of Gary Sanchez. Chances are you're probably someone who has had him in the past and you've been burned by him. And, you know, he has few seasons here hitting around or under 200. I get that. But I still think his upside is, I don't think he's ever going to have a great batting average, but can he hit 240, 250 with 30 plus home runs in that Yankees lineup? Sure, I think so. I will also point out that since I was hyping him up earlier in the spring when he hit a bunch of long home runs, he has not been as great since, and he's still striking out a lot. So there is a ton of risk. I get that, but Sanchez is going later than he's ever gone before. ADP is right around 150. At that point, I'm just trying to find a catcher who has upside, and Gary Sanchez is that guy. So he is both the catcher I'm drafting most and the one that I'm scared of most as well. Chris, was that enough time for you?
I need like 12 more seconds.
Scott, your 10-second thought on Gary Sanchez.
Yeah, it's similar to Garver, just Garver goes even later. True. Sanchez, I think, has a higher floor. I'd be surprised if you dropped Sanchez this year. So, you know, in some ways you could say he's a better pick, but I'd rather just wait and draft Garver.
All right, Chris, that was more than 12 seconds, so you should be good to go.
Yeah, it's probably Buster Posey. It would have been Will Smith, and it actually may be Will Smith, but given the news recently, I'll just try to make it Buster Posey instead. And it mostly just comes down to, I think he's a good bounce back bet. I think, you know, he was really hampered by a hip injury in 2018 and 2019. He had surgery after 2019, sat out the 2020 season. I think if he can just get back to hitting 280 with 10 home runs, which is what he was doing before that. And really that was just before 2019. I think he's going to be a must-start catcher.
Yeah, and I don't want him as my catcher in a head-to-head points league or just a league where you start only one catcher. But in a two-catcher league, if, you know, you're going to go pretty deep into the player pool. All you need is a catcher that doesn't hurt you. And I think Buster Posey can be that. So I actually don't mind getting him as my second catcher in those two-catcher leagues. Chris, we'll go right back to you, the first baseman that you keep drafting.
Yeah, the first baseman I have drafted the most is Eric Hosmer. I've drafted him 4 times out of 15 leagues so far. I have 3 more drafts left, and maybe someone else can top him, but that's the guy I've drafted the most. I am a little bit concerned because so far in the spring, he has not been hitting the ball in the air. Last spring, he was right around like 1 ground ball for every fly ball so far. This spring, it's about 3 ground balls per fly ball, which is where he was pre-2020. So that definitely makes me nervous because, you know, we were dealing with a small sample size with his improvement in 2020. And, you know, he made conscious decisions to do that. So it wasn't like it was just a fluke. He didn't quite sustain it all season, but he was consistently above where he was in previous years. He hasn't been that so far, but even if he's not that, I think he's probably going to hit 270 and drive in a ton of runs in that lineup.
Chris, did we just become best friends?
Is Eric Hosmer also your guy?
Eric Hosmer is the first baseman that I've drafted the most. And I do play in a lot of 15-team leagues over on the NFBC, and those are Roto. And I don't mind waiting and grabbing someone like Josh Bell a little bit later, or Eric Hosmer, or even Rhys Hoskins as a fallback option in a league that deep. Yep. And in Tout Wars the other day, that was a 12-team head-to-head points salary cap draft. I think I got him for $6 or $7, and he's not exciting. I understand that, but his lineup context alone is just fantastic. I mean, he's going to hit in the middle of one of the best lineups in all of baseball. And, you know, as the season went on last year, the final month of the season from August 1st on, so it was really the first couple of games, from August 1st on, he had a 50% ground ball rate. But I will point out that the 4 seasons prior, that's been 55% or more.
Right, that's the thing. If it's 50%, that's I think great. he's going to be a 25 homer guy who hits 275 at least.
Exactly. Yeah, so I'm with you there. Like, he's boring, I get that. I've really been kind of just spreading out who I've been drafting at first base. I've been getting a lot of Josh Bell as well. But yeah, Eric Hosmer is the guy for me. Scott, the first baseman you draft most?
Well, I don't think I've even thought about drafting Hosmer this year.
Oh, wow.
I don't like him. I don't like him at all. But I think the first base people probably associate me with the most, and I associate myself with the most, is Matt Olson. But it must be a bunch of mocks where I took him, because I don't actually have Josh him.
Bell. I was thinking it was Josh Bell.
Well, I am invested in Luke Voit in a few leagues, so I think it was a situation where Luke Voit is still there in round six for some reason. Why pass up Voit in round six to take Olson in round seven? That's kind of been the thought process there. I'm going to say Andrew Vaughn is probably the one I'm most invested in, because there are some leagues where I'm counting on him as my actual first baseman, and there are some leagues where he's like a corner infielder or even a bench bat. Getting a lot of Vaughn.
Yeah, I've been getting him too. Just got him tonight again, and I have a few deeper leagues where I wind up with him as my corner. And I know you've made the comp before, Scott, of Pete Alonso. I don't. No one's saying that Andrew Vaughn's going to go out and hit 50 home runs, but can he have a significant fantasy impact in his first season? Yeah, I do think that's possible. Scott, we'll go right back to you. The first baseman that scares you most.
Oh, did we do that at catcher? I don't think we did that at catcher.
All of them.
Did we do that? Oh yeah, I think I only spoke about my Gary Sanchez. Yeah, double down. Give me the catcher and first baseman you're scared of.
Okay. So the first baseman I am scared of the most is, I'm going to say that it's kind of Cody Bellinger, I think that's
the obvious answer. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. For the cost. I mean, obviously if he's there in round three, I might hesitate depending who else is there. If he somehow makes it to round four, then obviously you take Cody Bellinger, but that's never going to happen. The catcher I'm scared of the most is, I guess, Gary Sanchez, but I'm not really that scared because it's not a huge investment. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Nobody's that. They're all kind of the same level of scary in a way.
Yeah.
Maybe Will Smith, I guess. It seems like his value slipping based on the reports he's only going to start 90 games, which I think it'll be closer to 110. But the point is, there is going to be a playing time concern there that his ADP hasn't, the overall ADP hasn't accounted for.
Chris, the first baseman and catcher, since I somehow skipped you for that one as well, that you are scared of most.
I think at catcher, it like Scott said, I think it's kind of all of them. Like, except for JT Realmuto, I think things can go very wrong for any of them. I think that they all have a relatively low floor.
Just give me a name that you see in the draft room and you just skip
Gary Sanchez.
Okay.
I mean, Salvador Perez is another one who I've just had no interest in drafting this year.
Because the price is up.
Yeah, but like, he's probably going to hit 25 homers. You know, there's only so little Salvador Perez can do. The first baseman I'm most worried about, it's Cody Bellinger. It has to be, I think, given the shoulder, given the fact that we haven't seen him play much in the spring. We're not 100% sure how ready he is. Shoulder injuries can have a lingering effect. So if he was healthy, I think I'd feel pretty good about him. But right now, I have some skepticism.
I am with you guys 100% on Cody Bellinger, worried about him. And I've been that way. I don't have a single share of him. So I think I've done, 15, 20 drafts. I don't have any Cody Bellinger at this point. The only other name I will point out is Luke Voit, for just the possibility of this plantar fasciitis foot injury, just kind of like turning back up again, because it kind of hampered him a little bit towards the end of last season and the postseason. There was talk of him in the offseason. He got a platelet-rich plasma injection in his foot to treat this, and he has orthotics in his cleats. So, I mean, it's enough of a deal where like he had to have special cleats made for him. So it's just something that's in my mind.
Orthotics are great, man, though. I speak from personal experience. Life-changing. I do. I can actually continue to walk around pain-free after a visit to the grocery store, which used to be an issue.
Well, I hope it's the same for Luke Voit and anyone else who has drafted him to this point. Scott, at second base, who do you find yourself drafting most?
The second base, I have a lot of second basemen that I draft a lot. But the one I draft the most of all, I know it's technically Brendan Rodgers, but again, that's really deep and I'm in enough 15 team leagues that it's just easy to take him at the very end of it. So I don't know how helpful that is. He's not second base eligible yet. I was going to say Tommy Edman. I want it to be Ty France. He's not there yet. I've got a lot of Jorge Polanco. Like, these are, I know it's a lot of low end guys, but I kind of end up with too many second basemen on my bench at the end of every draft because there's some really late options that I like. And then, you know, earlier I'm just taking whoever falls to me. So I don't think I'm especially invested in any one of the high end options. I think that's the best answer you're going to get.
Chris, the second baseman you find yourself drafting most?
Ketel Marte. It's an easy call for me. I've drafted him in 7 of my 15 leagues. Him and Byron Buxton are my most drafted players so far. And I pick him on average 61st overall. His ADP is 84th. So I am very happy to reach on Ketel Marte. I think he's going to be a stud. I think he's got a pretty good chance to be the best player at the position.
Yeah, I like Ketel Marte. I mean, the price is rising. He went for, I want to say it was like $22 or $23 in this 15-team salary cap draft that I did on Wednesday night. So the price is climbing. I think he's almost back to basically where he was being valued at last year. Maybe rightfully so. We'll see. But I do like Ketel Marte myself. Jeff McNeil is actually the one that I find myself drafting most. And I think regardless of format, he'll be a very solid contributor. He's one of those guys in the middle rounds of a roto or head-to-head categories draft where he's going to help your batting average. And that's, you know, not necessarily the easiest thing to find. So maybe it's 20 home runs, going to be near the top of the Mets lineup. And you know, I think the counting stats should be solid because that lineup is very good. And then in a points league, he makes a lot of contact. It's kind of like a DJ LeMahieu light. And I like the eligibility as well with Jeff McNeil. Scott, a second baseman that you are scared of. This might be the same answer for all of us. Oh, no, it's not. Okay.
I got the first syllable out. Keston Hira. I have passed over in so many drafts when my rankings tell me I'm supposed to take him. I'm just like, it's too early to take that kind of risk. I know the upside is huge. The upside hasn't changed since this time a year ago when everybody was in on him, but he just, the strikeout rate is awful. It's awful, and it's been terrible again this spring, and I just think there's too much downside. He was basically unusable last year, and I think there's a chance he is again.
That's for points leagues, though.
No, either way, I'd rather just wait and take Dylan Moore if I need that power speed combo, and I'm taking a risk anyway.
No, I mean the unusable comment.
Yeah, no,
he
won't be unusable in a roto league.
Yeah, he had 13 homers and 32 RBI and 3 steals. Like you wish the steals were higher, but they were the year before. I don't think
that's unusable. More home runs than I thought he hit. Mm-hmm. But 212 batting, like that's still pretty.
Yeah, no, he wasn't good. Life. Yeah,
yeah.
But like Dylan Moore hit 206 in 2019 in a much larger sample size.
Sure, but the cost is way different.
Yep. Keston Hira did hit a pair of ding dongs off of Walker Buehler on Tuesday, so that was nice to see him get going there. But 13 strikeouts and 34 at bats in the spring, strikeouts continue to be a big issue for Keston Hira. I'm scared of him quite a bit myself. Kevin Biggio is the other one that I think we're all kind of worried about, and he's dealing with a pinky injury, which might actually be a fracture. So we'll have to pay attention to what's going on with Kevin Biggio. Chris, do you have another answer outside of Biggio, or was he the one that you're scared of as well?
Yeah, I think the thing with Biggio is he's probably going to steal enough bases that he'll still be useful. I think given the price, I'm probably more concerned about Brandon Lau. Because if he doesn't hit, and we've really only seen him hit, I think he has 3 months in the majors with an OPS over 900. He's got a handful with an OPS around 800, but you know where we're taking him. You know, it's kind of betting that he's going to be, you know, a lot closer to what he was last season. And as we know with the Rays, they're willing to stick a guy in a platoon if he's not producing the way they need him to. So I think there's ways that it can go wrong for Brandon Lau.
The players we're scared of again at second base. That was Keston Hira for Scott, Brandon Lau for Chris, and Kevin Biggio for myself. At shortstop, Chris, who is the shortstop you keep drafting?
Adalberto Mondesi. Ooh. I have 6 shares of Adalberto Mondesi. One of them is even in a head-to-head points league because if you look what he's done between 2018 and 2019, it's like 161 games and he's right around 500 fantasy points. That'll play even at shortstop. So in roto, it's just really easy. Like if he's there in the middle half of the second round, I'm probably going to take him. It just, it's so nice not to have to worry about stolen bases after that. I know there's risk if he gets hurt, but if he stays healthy, you're not going to finish lower than half in stolen bases, no matter what else your team looks like.
Mm-hmm. Go big or go home. Chris is drafting Adalberto Mondesi and Byron Buxton on the same team. As we've said, he's either going to be in first place by July or he's going to be doing really good in his fantasy football prep. Scott, the shortstop that you keep drafting.
It's Corey Seager. He's my ideal choice in round three, but it's to the point where if it's late in round two and all the starting pitchers I want are gone, I'll reach into round two to take him. I think if you're looking at like best pure hitters in baseball, it's a foursome right now. It's Mike Trout, it's Juan Soto, it's Freddie Freeman, and it's Corey Seager. If you look at their expected stats last year for those four, very comparable. Corey Seager was arguably the best hitter in the postseason. He's been arguably the best hitter this spring, and he might be the best hitter in the world when we look back on 2021.
For me, it's Tim Anderson. There, look, if Tim Anderson has a bad season, that is maybe the player that I have the most riding on this year. If he's awesome, I'm going to have a pretty good season. If not, better luck next year, because I do have a lot of him. But I think, you know, where he goes specifically in roto or head-to-head categories, someone that can contribute both batting average and a good amount of steals. You know, we think that he has the talent to steal maybe 30 plus. We wouldn't project that. He's probably going to get you 20, but could also give you 20 home runs. Going to lead off for one of the best lineups in the American League. And even in a points league, I know he does not walk, which is typically what we want to see in that format. I think he gets pushed down a little bit too far. He is going to get a lot of volume, a lot of plate appearances, again, hitting at the top of that lineup. So Tim Anderson, someone I just continuously find myself drafting. Chris, the shortstop that you are scared of most?
The shortstop I am scared of most is probably, I guess it's Bo Bichette, just based on ADP. I don't think he's going to be bad, and picking a bust at shortstop when I've had to do that for various pieces has been incredibly difficult to do because I don't think there's really anybody who's an actively bad value, but you know, people are drafting Bichette as a second round pick based on half of one season, total plate appearances. I just think that's, we're falling into the trap of, well, he's played two seasons, but it was like 50 in one and 30 in the other. So it's still a small sample size. It's just too early for that. And he's a guy who doesn't have like amazing tools. He has good tools across the board that we're hoping combine to make a really good player. But like the same was said of Dansby Swanson, and he's turned into an okay player, but you know, he doesn't have that one standout carrying tool. So I think something similar could happen to Bichette.
Yep. Blue Jays are going to come for us again because we're talking down their players, but it's Marcus Semien for me. And we just did our bust 3.0 yesterday. And Scott, you added him to the list recently. And I agree with you. I think he's still kind of overvalued going in that 130 to 150 range. He's had one massive season, and outside of that, I don't think that Marcus Semien has done all that much. So you can either use Semien as the player you're scared of, Scott, or another shortstop that you're worried about.
I was actually kind of thinking, I could have gone Semien, but I was thinking Mondesi, actually, just the other side of the coin. I mean, I understand the allure of drafting him. Your stolen base needs are kind of met once you do that. But, you know, injury prone, obviously, wild fluctuations in his performance as a hitter. You don't really know what you're getting there. And round three always seems too early for me to take him, and he never lasts beyond there in a 5x5 league.
If you are watching on the video side, don't go anywhere. If you are listening to the podcast, we're going to take a quick break. But when we return, third base is up next here, Fantasy Baseball Today.
Shopify's already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. That's right. Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. With Shopify POS, you can accept credit cards, mobile payments, and every other major payment method, all with low fees and transparent pricing, starting on day one. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/MLB podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/MLB podcast to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/MLB podcast.
New CBS Monday.
Federal agents.
Hands where we can see them.
NCIS Hawaii is back.
About to set it all on fire.
New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violent Island, you got it.
Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10, 9 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
Scott, why don't you get us started here at third base with the player that you were drafting most at the position?
It's Ke'Bryan Hayes. Thank goodness. Thank goodness it's Ke'Bryan Hayes. It might be Alex Bregman, actually. It might be Alex Bregman. Bregman's kind of my ideal fourth round pick, and I have a lot of him. I still think he has at least second round upside. But Ke'Bryan Hayes was my player I love on Valentine's Day. And sometimes when I make that pitch that early in draft prep season, I kind of price the player out of my range and don't end up with that much of him. But I've been happy to climb up a couple rounds with everybody else to secure Hayes, because I feel like the bad scenario for Hayes, obviously not the worst case, but kind of the bad, maybe default scenario for Hayes is Gio Urshela with some speed. And I think his ADP certainly gives him that. And then if it turns out he's more of a 30 homer guy than a 20 homer guy, he showed some signs of being last year, and you know, a lot of high exit velocity readings this spring too. Then you know, he could be a total stud. So Hayes is the one I draft the most.
Scott, did we just become best friends?
I don't know. Did we?
I find myself drafting a lot of Ke'Bryan Hayes recently as well, and I think I'm someone that just reacts too much to spring training, which is definitely a fault as a fantasy player, but I mean, gosh, how can you ignore what he's doing, right? Like, after what he did last year, he is now 18 for 40 in the spring, 6 doubles, 2 triples, a home run, 8 RBI, 2 steals, he's batting .450. I've made this comp before. I think the high end projection for Ke'Bryan Hayes this season is something like what Anthony Rendon did in his second year, where across 153 games, he hit .287, 21 home runs, 111 runs scored. That's definitely optimistic in the Pirates lineup, and 17 steals. It's high end, but I think Ke'Bryan Hayes might be that type of player. So I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, I forgot Rizzo had a 17 steal season. That's crazy.
Did I say Rizzo Rendon. Or Rendon?
No, Rendon.
Yeah, it's Rendon.
Oh, you said Rizzo. Okay.
Chris, the third baseman you draft most, I have a feeling it's not Ke'Bryan Hayes.
No. So I don't have anything against him. He's had a really good 24 games plus a spring. Manny Machado / Rafael Devers. I have them both in 4 out of my 15 leagues. And so it's basically, if Manny Machado's there in the third round, I will take him. If Rafael Devers is there in the fifth round, I will take him. Both of them have to slip. It happens sometimes. My average pick on Manny Machado is 28. My average pick on Devers is 41. So I think they're both going to be phenomenal. I think they're both, you know, borderline first round caliber hitters. And if I take Shane Bieber, Jacob DeGrom, or Garrett Cole in the first round, I'm glad to end up with one of those two as one of my first three hitters.
Scott, the third baseman you're scared of most?
And Jose Ramirez, I also have 4. So just, I'm going to have one of those three on my team, I guess.
Nice.
You know, I added Nolan Arenado to my bus, but the one I'm actually scared of the most, and I know Chris doesn't like this, and I don't know that I have rational reasons for it, but maybe I have confirmation bias over Chris Bryant's 2020, because yes. I already saw him as a player in decline in a way the numbers hadn't reflected yet. And so then he drops off last year and there it is. It's happening. I haven't had any interest in drafting Chris Bryant at all this year.
Same Z's. Chris, the third baseman.
That's probably Arenado. Maybe I haven't drafted LeMahieu at all, but I'm not really worried about him. So it's probably Arenado.
Let's move over to the outfield, and we'll go right back to you here, Chris. Which outfielder do you find yourself drafting, whether it's early or middle rounds? Who you got?
You know who it is. It's Byron Buxton. I have him on 7 of my 15 teams so far. I've got 3 more drafts. I think there's a decent chance I end up with him in 10 of my 18 total. The funny thing is, my average Byron Buxton pick is 120.3, and his ADP is 113.4. So as much as I like Byron Buxton, I've only taken him ahead of his ADP one time out of the 7 times I've drafted him. So just keep letting him fall, folks, because I am glad I will be there when Byron Buxton falls after running into the outfield wall or one of his teammates or biting into a steak. I will catch him. So, just like a guy with legitimate 30-20 potential all day after pick 100.
Chris, I'm sure you didn't listen to the mailbag that Scott and I did alone, but I actually started it with the reason you weren't there was because you cracked your tooth eating steak.
Look, man, that's not with steak, but that happened to me once. It's not fun. I had to get a root canal. Root canals are the worst. I can also empathize with Byron Buxton.
Fair enough. Scott, the outfielder you keep drafting?
It's actually Will Myers, who I don't feel like we've talked about much, but when I was initially making out my rankings in October, I looked at Will Myers, I looked at Teoscar Hernandez, and I said, okay, there are a lot more reasons to believe in what Will Myers did than what Teoscar Hernandez did. So I put Will Myers ahead of Teoscar Hernandez. Little did I know Myers was going to go 40 picks after Hernandez on average. And I don't understand it at all because there's a better track record. He actually made improvements with his play discipline in the short season. Who knows if they'll last, but at least they were there, unlike Hernandez. And he has a better track record as a base stealer. Previous 4 years, 21 steals per 155 games for Will Myers. So, like, if he sustains last year's gains, he could be like a 35-15 guy, maybe even more steals than that. And I always love getting him as, like, I don't know, an 11th round outfielder in a roto league. It's just, to me, that's easy money.
Yeah. And he was such easy profit last year. I remember he was going probably outside the top 250, maybe outside the top 300. And it's crazy how much, you know, this is me speaking out against Trent Grisham, but how much Trent Grisham has risen, whereas Will Myers, who is more of a proven player, has not risen as much. So it's just kind of interesting to compare the rise for both of those guys. For me, it's Austin Meadows. I've talked about him, you know, basically all offseason. I'm giving him a pass for last year. Dealt with COVID right before the season started. Got a late start. I think he came back 2 weeks in, and then he strained his oblique, and it was really just a mess of a season for him. I'm not completely sure that he gets back to the top 15 outfielder that he was back in 2019, but I think 25-plus home runs, double-digit steals in a pesky Rays lineup is the term that I'll use. I think that's definitely possible for Austin Meadows. I really like his price tag this year. Scott, the outfielder that you are scared of most?
Yeah, that's a good question. I probably should have been thinking about it. You know, it's probably the other side of the coin, Teoscar Hernandez, who I've talked about how he's the bust I'm most confident in, and I kind of laid out the case for him when describing Will Myers. So let's go with Teoscar Hernandez.
Yeah, whenever I see the name, I don't really have a good reason to believe that this guy is done outside of just he's getting older and was not good in September. But Charlie Blackmon, it doesn't seem exciting. Nolan Arenado is not on the team anymore, so the lineup context is clearly lessened. That's going to bring the counting stats down for Charlie Blackmon. Maybe he still hits 280 and, you know, 25-ish home runs, and that would be a fine season for him, but that September was really bad. I kind of just think he's on the decline. I'm not very excited about Charlie Blackmon. Chris, the outfielder you're scared of most?
Yeah, unless they, like, dig a tunnel about 5,000 feet down and move the stadium, I'm happy to take Charlie Blackmon in like I've gotten him in like the 8th or 9th round.
Sure.
He falls way too much.
I think he went in the 11th round of my main event draft over the weekend. That's a 15 team
league. Yeah, like that's just,
I was going to take him that round if he fell to me. I was all the way, I think I had picked 14 in the 11th round. I would have taken him, but he didn't make it.
He's never hit 280.
Yeah.
Except for 102 plate appearances in 2011. He's been higher than 280 every single season. So I don't care if he's not good anymore. He plays at Coors Field.
Sure.
Guy I'm most concerned about is probably in this, is more true now, and I maybe wouldn't have picked him before the injury tonight, but Eloy Jimenez, I definitely had some questions about his ability to live up to his lofty draft status just because he is so dependent on being an outlier in BABIP and home run to fly ball rate. Because he strikes out too much, because he hits the ball on the ground a relatively high amount, not quite a 2019 Eric Hosmer level, but maybe a post August 2020 Eric Hosmer level. So there's just a chance he's like a 275 hitter with 28 homers, and that's good, but like he could be Michael Conforto, who's a lot cheaper.
Chris, the starting pitcher that you find yourself drafting most, I think I can guess this one. I'm going to take a shot. Is that all right?
Yes, there are three answers that would be correct.
Well, one of them has to be Ian Anderson.
That is the first one.
The other one is Zach Greinke?
No.
Ooh, no. Max Scherzer?
That's surprising. Max Scherzer also no. I have Scherzer and Greinke four times out of 15.
Oh. All right, well, then I give up.
Ramon Marquez and Sandy Alcantara.
Okay, yeah, so, well, all the Marlins, duh.
I mean, only one, plus a Brave. Anderson, he's the one I reach on. I take him 82nd on average compared to a 103 ADP. Marquez and Alcantara are both, you know, in the hundreds. Alcantara's 111, 118 by my picks, 173 for Ramon Marquez. Alcantara's a little higher than ADP, but he seems to be getting pushed up to that place anyway. And I think in Marquez and Alcantara's cases, I just think they're solid, reliable innings eaters that I'm not going to have to worry too much about. Marquez, obviously, I can sit him on the road or at home if I don't feel good about it. But yeah, those three guys, totally unsexy picks.
No, I'm with you with the unsexy picks because I was surprised to see this myself when I looked up my player shares, and Zach Wheeler is the starting pitcher that I draft most.
I have a lot of Wheeler too, yeah.
And
a lot of Wheeler.
I didn't think we were going to get to this point, but you know, just a couple of years ago, he felt injury prone. Now, all of a sudden, he's someone that we depend on for innings and volume. And, you know, look at what he did last year. He went at least 5 2/3 in all 11 of his starts. He went 6+ in 8 out of 11 starts last year. He went 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times, 7 innings for Zach Wheeler last season. So I do think the strikeouts are going to bounce back. I know some people might look at the strikeouts and the K per nine was below 7. That's gross. I mean, I can't defend that, but his swinging strike rate was actually better last year than it's ever been. So maybe he's not a strikeout per inning, but 8 Ks per nine, a Kyle Hendricks type. He's going, I think, a little bit later than Kyle Hendricks. Sure, give me all the Zach Wheeler. Scott, who you got?
Well, I thought about mentioning him. Obviously, there's a lot of pitchers I'm heavily invested in. Kenta Maeda, Shane Bieber, for that matter. If I'm picking between 5 and 9, I'm getting Shane Bieber most likely. But I guess the one I'll highlight here is Dylan Bundy, because I originally had him as a bust, but then it seemed like everybody else wanted him less than I did. So I just started drafting him as my fifth starter a lot. And now I'm kind of like, I'm okay with it because, you know, his home run rate got cut in half moving from the most hitter friendly, the division with the most hitter friendly venues to the division with the most pitcher friendly venues. It got cut in half. And, you know, maybe it won't be that low again this year, but you'd look at the XFIP, which measures fly ball rate as opposed to home run rate, and it was still 375-ish. You know, it's not like it was a scary XFIP for Bundy. I expect him to pitch deep into games. You know, he's going to have more than a strikeout per inning. I wouldn't want him as my number three, but as my number five, that sounds like a guy who's just going to bolster the rest, the already strong staff you've put together, and will be ready to slot in as your number four or number three if injuries set in. Because, you know, obviously still most of his starts this year are going to come in the AL West, those big parks there, including his own home park.
Chris, you're right there. You having some lighting issues?
It just keeps turning off, but it's...
I imagine your cat is just up there like turning it off.
Nothing's near it. That's what's weird. It's a light that you turn on just by touching. And then I move away and nothing's touching it, and it'll probably turn off fairly soon. So, sorry. Got distracted there. I heard nothing of what Scott said because of the ghost turning my light off.
He likes Dylan Bundy. That would be the opening day starter for the Los Angeles Angels.
I wrote a song about that. That's in the song.
Scott, the starting pitcher that you are scared of most?
Well, I mean, I would have said Denelson Lamet if we did this a week ago, but he's kind of fallen to a point that I'm okay with it. I'm probably going to say Sonny Gray. I can't see myself investing in Sonny Gray. I think it's a mid-range outcome is the hopeful outcome for him this year if this back issue still hasn't gone away dating back to last season. And obviously there's more downside from there.
I would have said Max Scherzer, but I'm a fraud and I got him on one of my teams over the weekend. So the other one there that going inside those top 2 to 3 rounds for me that I'm scared of is Walker Buehler. So nothing about the talent of Walker Buehler. No, I'm not worried about him giving up 9 earned runs in a spring training game. But between the blisters last year, the fact that we do have workload concerns, the Dodgers have a lot of depth and they need Walker Buehler for the postseason. They kind of care about the regular season, but they care about the postseason. They want to go out and they want to win World Series. So I think Buehler can give you 170, maybe 160 innings that are probably really good, but you know, there's not much margin for error there when it comes to Walker.
Yeah, I don't know why I didn't say him. That was my take first, Frank. You stole my take.
Yeah, I mean,
stole my Walker Buehler take.
What have you called it? The homogenization of our rankings? We're all just coming together. We're blending.
Yeah, it's true. The mind melt is happening.
Except for the guys I like.
Yeah, I mean, well, when Scott, boasts about Cabrian Hayes for 6 months straight, of course I got to draft him, right?
Like, you know, Scott, I'm gonna talk you into moving Byron Buxton inside your top 300 yet.
300. Maybe. Chris, give us the starting pitcher that you're scared of most.
We didn't mention Steven Strasburg early in the show, right?
No.
Nope.
I think it's kind of got to be him tonight. And maybe this is just an overreaction, but he made his first start since suffering that calf injury and walked 5 batters and struck out 1 and gave up 4 earned runs. And he said it was, my mechanics were bad and I was flying open. And that's why I was pitching poorly, which is not really what you want to hear in the penultimate start before opening day. But the more concerning thing, I think, would be that after the game, he revealed that he ruptured the plantaris tendon in his calf. Apparently that is worse than it sounds. I'm reading the MLB.com story, which sounds alarming, but luckily for the Nats, it was not the case. Quote, "I guess you don't really need it," Strasburg said. "It was just one of those lucky things where it went away and it wasn't a big issue. The doctor was pretty adamant about it, saying you don't really need it." Apparently he also went on to say that if we walked on all 4 legs, on all 4 limbs, it would be an issue. So it sounds like it's like a vestigial tendon that doesn't really have much function in human development at this point. Medical students in their first year often mistake it for a nerve when they're looking inside of the leg. I've learned all these fun facts.
You didn't even consult Dr. Jesse Morse on this.
All of that would make me feel better if he hadn't just had the start that he had. And look, maybe it's nothing. It's one spring start. Guys are working on things. He'll fix his mechanics, but like, I can't feel good about him after watching that. I sort of like just panic dropped him in my rankings and then realized like I dropped him to 27 behind Charlie Morton. That was probably an overreaction, but I kind of just want to move him to a point where I'm not interested in taking him. And so maybe that would be like 23rd behind Kyle Hendricks. That would be in the 95 range. Mm-hmm. And I feel like a total hypocrite because I think like 3 days ago, I was talking about how I wouldn't be that worried about Steven Strasburg. He doesn't have a history of lower body injuries, and this sounds like a non-issue. So
I will point out that a lot of really good pitchers had a really bad start last time out. Ian Kennedy struck out only 1. Walker Buehler allowed 4 home runs. Trevor Bauer allowed 4 home runs. Wait,
how did Ian Kennedy get in there?
He struck out 1.
Yeah, I think you mean someone else.
Oh, I'm sorry. Ian Anderson.
I was like, wait a second.
Ian Anderson. My bad.
What? I was like, 1 strikeout for Ian Kennedy?
That sounds like a pretty good outing.
That's pretty good. we're not used to going this late at night, so we're a little wonky right now.
So I'm not sure. Like, I feel like I should drop him, but I don't know. I'm waffling on it.
Do it, man. They're your rankings. Be aggressive.
Just in front of Tyler Glass now, so he's going to be 80th overall.
Fair enough. Let's pair the relief pitchers together. Sure, you could just say that you're scared of all of them if you want to, but come on, what's the fun in that? Scott, give me the relief pitcher you are drafting most and the one that you were scared of.
I could say Will Smith, but I think it's technically Amir Garrett. They're kind of my hope for my first reliever and my second reliever there. I've talked about them a lot. The reliever I'm most scared of is Craig Kimbrell. Hopefully his last couple outings shows he's fixed the delivery issue, but I'm skeptical. Skeptical.
Fair enough. Chris, the relief pitcher you draft most and the one that you're scared of.
It appears the relief pitcher I draft most is Emmanuel Clase, with a Chris Towers ADP of 300th overall. So that tells you about my approach to relief pitcher. You can read more about that on CBSSports.com today. I wrote my grand unified theory of drafting in 2021 and avoiding relief pitcher as part of that. Which relief pitcher I'm most afraid of? I don't know. James Karinchak, I guess, if I can't say all of them. If man, there's a lot, though. Like Trevor Rosenthal threw like, 16 innings last season. Devin Williams threw like 20. Rafael Montero wasn't throwing his slider for most of the, there's a lot of people to be scared of at relief pitcher. I don't really draft them.
Mm-hmm. For me, you know, when I'm drafting a second or third closer, it's been Daniel Bard, who's already been named the Rockies closer. I know it's kind of scary to draft any pitcher that pitches in Coors Field, but he was really good last year. He was out of baseball for, I don't know, 7 or 8 years, and he just came back and he was great. So I think he's going to be the guy for the Rockies. I feel pretty confident there. And Brad Hand is the one that, you know, usually I shy away from. And I know his velocity has been up in the spring, but he has allowed runs in 5 of his 6 spring appearances, and including on Wednesday night. So I was reading about him earlier. The Nationals want to get at least one more relief appearance in for him before opening day where he actually looks good. So I think a capable backup there in Tanner Rainey, just follow that situation. Brad Hand is someone I am a little bit worried about myself. There you go, everyone that we are drafting and we are scared of. For Scott and Chris, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again tomorrow with Adam Azer. Bye-bye.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.